There's a whole area of computer programming called artificial intelligence. And they will go in there and dialogue with a computer, if that's the proper word. That is, you give information and the computer gives information back. That's called dialogue with it. It may not be what we call dialogue. And you become amazed that there may be a person actually out there rather than a computer calculating the program rules. Let me give you one type of instruction that a computer can do very well. It's a if statement, if. And what you do is you actually write down as part of the instruction, you write if, and then you put in parentheses something that, you know, if A is greater than B, or if in my program on lakes, if the dissolved oxygen level is below, say, 0.1 milligrams per liter. Okay, certain things will happen. The biochemical reactions change then. Okay? So it's very important to put into the program if, and then you put in if the dissolved oxygen DO is less than a particular number. You could use symbolic language. But you put in some sort of comparison that the computer has to make in here. I won't go into the language that we use, but we could say if the dissolved oxygen is below a tenth of a milligram per liter, dissolved oxygen in the water, then the computer should look for certain or program certain kinds of biochemical reactions going on. Certain bacteria can't live if the dissolved oxygen is below a certain level. But if it's above a certain level, then there are other kinds of bacteria that can live. And so it's important for the computer, as it's calculating things, it has to determine what the dissolved oxygen level is, and is it above this threshold or below that threshold. So you put an if statement in here, okay? And then what you do with the if statement, it is combined with what is known as a go-to statement, a go-to. You say, if this thing behaves this way, then, and I'm going to abbreviate, so I'm not going to write in pure Fortran, then you would go to, you actually write go to, you'd go to another set of instructions. So what you can do is you can take a given situation and you say, if this occurs, then go to this set of instructions. Whereas if this occurs, go to this other set of instructions. And if this occurs, go to this set of instructions. And you can put a whole series of if statements down. And what a computer can do is it ends up deciding then, based upon your if statement, what kinds of calculations to do. Okay? So you might have, in the case of a lake, you might have, say, if the dissolved oxygen is so much, and if the sunlight is such and such a level, and if the temperature is so much, and if a certain chemical is above a certain level, then go to this set of calculations, and that'll determine what something else happens. Okay? So this becomes, you can do some very interesting things with it. You can tell someone, well, just give the computer some information. So they give some information, and then the computer turns around and responds to you based upon that information. And it usually responds by printing out some responses. Okay? So you can add, if the dissolved oxygen is below a certain level, go to a print statement which says, be aware that the dissolved oxygen level is below a certain level and certain things will happen. You have to program that in. So you can have an if statement which will go to some set of instructions which lead to the computer to print out some information. Okay? Now this, if you're not familiar with the actual programming, this seems almost magical sometimes because you can put a whole lot of these if statements in. And it looks like the computer's really it's making decisions, and then it's figuring things out, and then it's telling you information. But what it is a simple if statement with go-to and a series of these. Okay? You get what's there. Now, of course, if you make a mistake in the programming, and I put go-to and I tell a computer to go to the wrong set of calculations, okay? And there's actually a number, an address of the over here that tells the computer which set of calculations to go to. Now, if I put the wrong number in there, then the computer is going to do it anyway. So I may say, if the dissolved oxygen is very high, go to, and I put the wrong number down, and it's a set of calculations that assumes the dissolved oxygen is gone, is very low. The computer will calculate anyhow, and it'll print out an answer. The wrong answer, of course, because I made the mistake up in here in the go-to statement. I gave the wrong address. You get the picture? The computer just do it. You've provided a consistent set of instructions. The fact that it happens to be wrong, as long as the computer is allowed to do the calculations, then the computer will do it. If I put go to and I put a number here where there isn't any set of instructions, then the computer will say, I don't know where to go to. It'll print out an error statement that says, I don't know where to go to. But if you have it go to the wrong place, the computer will go to the wrong place. And it'll calculate it out and it'll print out the information if you make this mistake right up in here. Okay? Does everybody see that? Okay, so by setting a number of print statements, and a print statement means the computer actually prints out on pieces of paper whatever you told it to, you can do a whole lot of things with computers. And by setting up these kinds of if statements, you can have the computer just about talk to you. Okay? In fact, there are some people saying they're developing computers and using more sophisticated examples than I've given you, that you plug in information and you can't tell whether there's another person on the other side or whether it's a computer. You can't tell. These are very complex programs. I'll point out later that children can tell, but quite often adults have a hard time telling. I'll give you an example. We had Professor Dreyfus, who wrote the book What Computers Can't Do, Bert Dreyfus in Berkeley, describing, I believe, as a computer program that is saying, well, you're in a restaurant, and so now you can plug in any kind of information, ask any kinds of questions you want about what's going on in that restaurant, and the computer goes back and prints back, well, here's what's going on, here's what's going on, and so you're having this conversation through the typewriter, or now they're beginning actually to have a verbal kind of instructions. And here you're having this discussion with this computer about this restaurant. And you're not really sure whether there's a person on the other end or the computer on the other end. This whole discussion. Now, how do the kids figure it out? Kids blow the computer. They'll figure out, a little kid is sitting there, and they'll say, well, do I want to ask the waiter a question. Okay, ask the waiter a question. Now, an adult would say, what's on your menu for today? Is the fish fresh and so forth? And the answer would come back. But the kid will ask something like, when you put on your shoes, do you put on your socks first or your shoes first? Well, every one of us knows what that is, but the computer will report back, I don't know. Okay, and the kid will laugh, you know, and he'll ask a question, did he eat his hamburger with his eye or his ear? You know, and the computer, I don't know, you know, because the programmer didn't program those kinds of questions in, you see, but the kid knows better. So he says, it seems it's rather distressing. Here's this group of adults amazed at this computer program, and then the kids blow it. Okay. But again, what the person would say is, oh, yes, but that information hadn't been programmed into the computer. If we could program that information into the computer, then we could give the computer to give you the right answers. Okay? So we just haven't had the computer programmed that way. Okay, is everybody clear on that? Now, any questions on that? I mean, do you think you're a computer? Do you think you're a computer? That's the question now. I mean, you should figure things out, obviously, but do you think you're just a computer? Let's put it that way.
No.
Okay.
But now let's see. If I hear a lot of what people treat the Bible as really sounding like that's the way they're accepting themselves as a computer. For example, they treat the Bible as a computer program. Therefore, it cannot have any inconsistencies. Right? Computer program doesn't work if it has an inconsistency or a contradiction. So therefore, by definition, a Bible can't have any contradictions in it. That sounds like you're treating it as a computer program. They use these as, if such and such, go to such and such. Right?
Amen.
Right? Okay? Right? And you get the instruction of what to do. Okay? You can even program, by the way, a random search in the computer. It has a random number generator. And of course some people, well, they go in like this. Ah, now, if such and such, go to this. Okay, that's a random search technique. You print out certain kinds of responses. And of course, that's how the if go to would do it. God then becomes the great computer programmer. And our role is, of course, to gather this computer program into our brain so that we can be faithful to the great computer program. By faithful is that whenever the if comes up, we go to the right place and we have the proper response. Be it a marriage, be it friendship, being lame behavior with respect to drinking or dancing or whatever, a whole lot of things. We have this if statement and go-to statement, and the program is there, and therefore it must be inerrant. It cannot have error in it, because if you program something in the computer that is consistent and it has an error, the computer just does it. Right? This does it. So if we assume that if we behave the way this says and we're doing things properly, it's right, therefore it has to be in no errors in that computer program. God has debugged it. And there must be no inconsistencies or else we won't be able to go ahead and compute. And it must be a complete set of if statements to cover everything. Okay? This amazing computer program. I mean, there aren't any like it in science. They say, well, that's because God knows more than we do, and that's the way we approach the Bible. You see what I mean by computer is metaphor. Now, we're not sure which is the metaphor. Maybe we are the computer, we're that way, and therefore the computer is kind of a metaphor of us, or maybe it's the other way around. But the question, either way, is that I want to face to you is, you said that we are called to be more than a computer. Well, let's pursue what that means, what it really means. We are more than a computer. What does it mean that we are more than a computer? Got some ideas on that?
We might question our instructions.
We might question our instructions, right. And how do we question our instructions? On what basis do we do that? And they do have computer programs, for example, that search for inconsistencies in the program. And then they will print out errors. They do like that.
One way would be from your previous experience.
Okay. Okay, someone else back.
Something didn't work.
Okay, someone else back here.
Well, I was going to say, that's no different than a computer.
So computer, they have some computers that can take new information in, you see, and then assimilate that new information in it. They can, for example, you can calibrate coefficients. Okay, if you have a coefficient in an equation, you have A equals B times C, and then B out in here depends upon a certain amount of data, so you make an estimate of what B is, and then the computer uses that, and then as new information comes in, you calculate B more exactly. You tune the computer program.
The computer doesn't know it did something wrong, though, unless you read the printout and tell it.
Unless you program that. Yeah.
Someone told me that if there had been a computer in 1883, it would have computed that by 1913, New York City would be inundated under 20 feet of horse manure.
Right. Well, that depends. That depends on the assumptions that are plugged into it.
Yeah, you know, right. I mean, and that there are.
I wouldn't agree with that. I would say that if someone decided to make a linear progression of horse manure,
right,
and programmed that into it, they would have ended up with that answer. However, I would say that anyone who's worked with systems would know that a linear progression is just, you know, unreasonable. There's very few things in this world, right, Larry, that are nice and linear.
Not only that, it's an awful lot of horse manure.
That's right. That's right. Well, and you could program into the computer, for example. You could program certain information into the computer that once the horse manure gets above a certain level, that's just plain ridiculous. I mean, and you could have the computer print out. That's ridiculous. This whole, the instructions you've given me and the information you've given me just don't make sense. And you could have the computer actually program that out. I can do that.
But I think that in your interpretation, mentioning the interpretation of the Bible, that this is important. That I think that one of the major problems we have in interpretation of Scripture is that we try to interpret it with the 20th century mind. And all the things that have happened and changed, you know.
But we have a 20th century mind.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The problem, you see. And how else are we to interpret it? That's the way we've been programmed. I'm pushing a little bit. I'm just playing devil's advocate. Yeah, back here.
The one thing that struck me when you were talking too about the use of the term dialogue with computers, that there's no engagement with the computer. There's no sense of the sharing of unique personalities, and within the context of engagement, there is the human potential of actually transcending our information, of actually an aha moment that is almost a spiritual explosion within us where we are above all previous perceptions and all information. The computer cannot do that.
Would we be above our program, the Bible, if we accepted it? Would we be above that too?
I think that to some extent, yes. To some extent, to be engaged with the Word, and that's part of Luther's whole business of dealing with the living Word.
Okay.
To be engaged with the Word is to lift us above a particular historical reality or literalism.
So the living Word then implies, as a computer person, I would say, then kind of an incomplete program.
Yes.
That would be considered by some to be heresy, of course.
I'm aware.
Somebody else.
You've got free choice. Computer, your program choice.
Well, the computer decides, and we choose.
But it's not free.
What does that mean?
Human control.
What does that mean? But how is it? What do we do when we choose something that is different than when the computer decides something?
We can take what's in the computer and use it in our own minds to find something that is outside of our programming.
Well, we could have one computer taking information from another computer.
But something that is not programmed into it.
Something that is not programmed into it. Okay? Where will we get that something?
We're limited on computer programming by what is already thought, by experience.
Okay. Where would we get that something?
Some little kid.
Some little kid. That's probably, okay, that's probably something that would baffle the computer. I'll have to admit that. Then we got to keep in mind, though, that a computer can adapt to new information. That is true. Yes?
Reasoning and logic. If you don't put anything reasonable or logical in the computer, it can't give anything reasonable or logical back. So that's the one thing that you have that.
Well, if we say logic generally means internal consistency. Okay, so you can have something unreasonable that's still logical, you know, or something ridiculous that's still logical. The computer needs logic. It really does. Now, you're right that you could put in some ridiculous things that were nevertheless consistent, and the computer would still print out answers. Ridiculous ones. Does that happen to people, too?
Never.
You stretching, or?
No, just stretching a thought. You know, you've mentioned several times
the question of faith and faithfulness is an important one that hits me. And then you hit the consistency again. And I'm wondering if that might not be an important clue.
Okay.
That the computer cannot live with an inconsistency.
Yeah. Okay.
And that when we press the Bible to be a computer of a perfectly consistent shape, we may be missing the very essence of it, because many modern minds criticize the Bible for, and maybe Christians too, for their irrationality.
Okay.
Can a computer deal with paradox, irrationality, inconsistency?
So maybe this will save us from just being computers, you see, paradox and inconsistency. But, okay, we got two words here that we want to, consistency and inconsistency. The computer demands consistency. There's a lot of people who call themselves, at least theologians, who also demand this. And you will be considered a heretic if you say, oh, the Bible is inconsistent. Now, as a person with some computer experience, I would have to say, either that's a higher level programming or it's poor programming, computer programming. I mean, take the Genesis stories. In one story, man and woman are created at the same time, together. Okay. In another story, that's not the same, that's not what happens. Now, you can't have both. One, I don't know whether it's man and woman, or just Adam, I can't remember the story, created before the animals. The other one after the animals. The animals in one story are created after Adam, because Adam is lonely. Adam is lonely. The Adam, now you can't create something before and after at the same time. That's an inconsistency. Okay? Now, it's interesting, the stories that we actually tell kids in Sunday school are really a combining of the two stories. We don't tell them two stories. We tell them the animals were created first, and then there was Adam created, and then Eve was created from Adam's rib. And I think that's a blending of the two stories, isn't it? That's not the way it says in the Bible, but we want to make it consistent, you see, so we kind of don't tell them certain parts.
Well, generally what happens is the second creation story, which is the earlier one, is seen as an elaboration of the first one instead of two separate stories.
Instead of two separate stories, right. And yet there's inconsistencies there. And yet, at the same time, I feel kind of good because I don't want to be just a computer. And I think I think you're sensing that. The other word that you brought up, and I brought up, is faithful. The computer does exactly what it's told. And that's how I said faithful. Is that what being faithful means to us? Do exactly what you're told? No. But it sounds almost a little bit like heresy to say, no, that's not what's being faithful. Okay?
Somebody's running around the holding with a question authority t-shirt on.
Yeah.
And a computer won't necessarily question authority, but we will.
No, we could program ways that it would question authority. I mean, I could have if something such, then tell the President of the United States that he's wrong. I mean, I could print that in there. We could do that. Okay. Well, so we've got some problems here, or somehow being faithful does not mean just doing what this thing tells you to do. The Bible, okay? That's not just being faithful. And this maybe does have, we can't just judge this in such a way that says, oh, it doesn't have any contradictions, it's a complete program. And yet that does sound like a little heresy. Yeah?
For Christmas, my wife got me a computer chess.
Uh-huh.
And I keep making this statement. It is completely unforgiving. If I make a mistake, whammo, it just puts it to me right like that.
That's right. That's
right. And it just, when you think of it in the scriptures and how in the Old Testament the Israelites are complete, are always being unfaithful, and just a little remnant, always being called back, always, you know, and God does this, you know, but yet people want to think God as being this computer that's got the plan all set out, you know.
Now we have to, we also have to take this word unfaithful. When they're unfaithful, what were they doing? Were they just not following the program? Was that what the unfaithful was? Yeah, so you...
I was, about 3 months ago, I watched the movie Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. It was one of the late 60s, I think. And it was really interesting about the whole issue of faithfulness. Because the daughter brings a man whom she loves home to a father and mother who has nurtured her on the fact that all people are equal and the same, and he happens to be black. Father finally tells her, you can't marry me, in one of his times of struggle. Now, the question was raised, is she faithful to her father by obeying his word or by living out the vision that he gave her?
Yeah. Okay.
I wonder if that's not the issue.
Where we're getting somewhere, vision, which is kind of a mysterious kind of word. I'd like to go ahead and provide a little, sometimes what we do is when we're trying to find out differences, we form a test. We give a hypothetical situation to force us. And here's the situation I'd like you to think of. We have a computer that is going to decide. Now notice I've used the word choose for us and decide for the computer. Now we can still decide, but we have the capacity to choose. And I'm not so sure the computer has the capacity to choose. In fact, I don't think it does. But why? Well, I'd like you to go ahead and think of this little test, or this little example. We have a computer program and has a set of instructions and if statements and go to and print out and so forth and so on. And what that computer does is based upon its principles and based upon its rules and based upon its instructions and all the rest of that, it turns on a light switch in a room. That's situation number one. Situation number two, computer, maybe the same computer. It has a set of instructions, it has a set of rules, it has a set of principles, and it has if statements, go-to statements, and it sets off a fleet of ICBMs with multiple nuclear warheads. For the computer, the decision process is exactly the same, essentially the same. You line up the rules, the principles, the if statements, the go-to statements, and the switch is flipped. That's it. There is really no difference. But for you, would there be a difference? Would there be a difference for you? Yeah, there'd be a difference for you. For
only
sure.
In the emotions.
Huh?
Only in the emotional factor.
Only in the emotional. We've got to watch out with that word of only. Maybe especially would be a better word. Okay? You see, the computer, you would be forced to choose. The computer would just decide. And what would make it different for you is that you care. You care. You, and what do we mean by you care? You have seen children laugh and play. You have seen people and experienced people burn. You have experienced the grief of death. You have experienced loneliness. You have participated in it. And you know, not based upon principles, rules, statements, laws, and all the rest of that. You know in your very being what that means in the way that a computer can't know.
Not because of the rules that have been programmed into you. Not because of the instructions and the principles and the logic and all the rest of that. You know it from your experience, of which involvement with feeling and compassion and sensitivity is part of it. There's a whole level of knowing that is more fundamental than rules and principles and abstractions and go-to and the rest of that. It is knowing through caring, and caring is being involved in relation. So caring is more fundamental to choosing than figuring out something. If all you do is figure out, then you decide. But if you really care in your whole being, and you know in your whole being, not just in your head, the computer part of you, And Susan brought that out very well in the Gospel of John, the study of John. The difference in the word. They actually had a different word for knowing with your whole being in the Bible. It wasn't just figuring out in your head. That makes the difference, and the computer can't do that. The computer can't get out there and play with kids and hold them when they hurt. And adults. The computer can't do that. And so the computer doesn't know that. And so the computer cannot, I'll get to you in a minute, the computer cannot choose because the computer cannot care. The computer can only decide. Now I suggest to you that what is in the Bible may have a lot more to do with choosing and caring than figuring out and following rules. Now I'm not saying that there aren't rules that you have to figure out and so forth. But maybe there's a lot more in here about stories, about people who cared in different ways. And because they could care, they could choose. And if we miss that, if we look at this simply as rules and principles and programs that must be consistent and exact, and if statements and go-to statements and all the rest of that, we may miss the message that's there. At least a lot of the message that's there. Okay? Okay. Do you get where I'm going in terms of why we selected computer as metaphor to force us, you see, to say, how are we different? How are we different? And you knew that before we even had this discussion, because I said, is that what you are, is the computer? And people just said no. They just felt like they had to say no. They didn't want to be. There was something in them that, you know, that, right? Didn't you experience that? You just don't want to be considered a computer. Is that true? You just don't want to be. That's a call, okay? That's a call. You're called to be more than that, and that's why you feel uncomfortable about just being called a computer. Because there's a call to you to be more than that, and so you feel nervous and anxious. That is, you've got to do something more than that, and that's a call. That's a call. Accept that as a call, a gift. Okay? Don't try to explain it all or figure it all out. Say, well, does the gift come from God, and it's this? Accept the call, okay? Don't try to figure it out and get all the principles and rules like the computer would do. Accept the call. And then maybe you'll do some figuring out, but the call is more important than the figuring out. The caring is more important, is more fundamental than the figuring out that might, you may have to figure some things out, but the most fundamental thing is the call, to be, and to care, and to be involved, to love. And then maybe we'll do some figuring out, maybe or maybe not. Okay, you get where I'm heading. Now that is radically different than a lot of the ways that we've been taught. Knowledge and truth are considered more in terms of the computer way. Truth, you have basic principles. And even being moral, there you follow certain principles as though they've been programmed into you. Descartes, the philosopher, said, "What cogito ergo sum? I figure out, therefore I am." The existence was based upon that. Just think how different Western civilization would be if he could have said, I care, therefore I am. Okay? I care, therefore I am. And yet, I think in our experience here about how we're different than the computer and how important that is, to care is more fundamental, the call to care, than to figure out. And that's why science and technology don't have the depth that religion can have. I don't say religion always does, at least as it's practiced. Okay, some comments now. There were some people had their hands up at different times, but I wanted to kind of get finished with what that's one of the prerogatives, I guess, of being the leader. Okay. Yes?
Okay, well, you're saying that as a human being, we're, in a way, we're like computers. We must be considered the value of the truth.
I would say that if that's the way you see yourself as just the computer, then that's what you'll say. However, I'm pushing you to say there's something uncomfortable about that. First of all,
means that I cannot be consistent with my values.
Well, I mean, if that's the basis of who you are, then you are the computer. Then you really are the computer. And really what ends up with, you are consistent with the rules, the values that you have really chosen. And there's something nihilistic about that. It's something that, well then, the basis is I can choose any value. What I'm saying is, yes, you do need values, and you do need to look at consistency. But more fundamental than that is a call to care. To care. To be involved with compassion and passion. And that's more fundamental. And if we don't have that, then we are just a computer. And in the Bible, we see the Bible as a set of computer programs. Or worse than that, we see ourselves as kind of self-generating programs, and what we have to do is get the set of values so we can put if statements in and go-to statements in, and we can figure everything out. And then there's no need for care because you've got all this programmed into you, and the rules and values tell you how to care. Okay? And then care becomes really just following the rules and values, and then choice becomes merely decision because it's not care. What I'm saying is, yes, we have to have some values and so forth, but more fundamental than that is caring and the experience of care. So I say, yes, I have the value that I should take care of my children when they are sick. All right, so that's a value that's kind of programmed into me. But deep down, that's not really why I take care of my child. I see my child when they're sick, and I have compassion and love, and it goes beyond. It's more fundamental than the rules. Take care of your children when they're sick. Okay? We get the rules after we care and after we participate, and we get those rules to help us guide behavior and so forth. But without the care, the rules have no basis.
Where is it? I got to disagree with you on this because, I mean, we're talking about the same thing, but what I'm talking about is, I believe that, you know, caring about individuals, families, any place, comes, you know, from your own set of experiences, right?
Experiences, right.
Right. And where do those experiences come from?
Involvement.
Right. Okay. And in order for you to function, you have to be consistent with your experience.
Well, I wouldn't say consistent in the same way I would say in terms of we need a different context, maybe a different word. Consistent means no contradiction. And I would say if you're involved with children and caring, you're going to face a lot of paradoxes and contradictions. Right. I would say that what you would say it has to be consistent, I would say it has to be caring, compassionate. It has to make a difference on me. It has to be, you know, I am called into that, and there will be paradoxes and contradictions quite often that do arise out of that. And so I would say consistent, if we got, maybe we should use, we're using the word in two contexts. I think I agree with you, but the word is just used a little differently. Let's go back here and then over here.
But just to respond, the problem with what you said is not whether it's consistent or not. The problem is that from a faith perspective, you've left out a fundamental reality called metanoia. That is a conversion that can mean that I can live inconsistently with my experience. My experience in life is not joy or grace or love. That's not the common denominator of life. The common denominator of life is pain, exclusion, and death. And metanoia means that there's a possibility that I can be a caring person, if I understand you, a human being, by living in a different...
If in your mind you realize that there can be inconsistencies,
but
what I'm saying is that in your mind, that you must be consistent, realizing that there are, what you said, inconsistencies.
But for me, metanoia is much more fundamental than mental.
Now, in your mind, I don't like that phrase. And maybe we need, you know, we're going to get into this maybe next time, Joe. You can get a little bit in terms of the word knowing, knowledge. And I think there wasn't there a word knowing in your mind, which is different than knowing with your whole being? And the one that's used in Scripture is kind of knowing with your whole being, and occasionally with knowing with your mind.
And you see that if you just add a new E.
Yeah.
I mean, that's clearly not intellectual knowing, that's a coming together of
So maybe we can rediscover some words from the Bible out of this confrontation, that obviously Adam knowing Eve was not something a computer does. It has a sexual part to it, as well as more than that. And obviously the computer is not, you know, that's not the goal of the computer. At least I hope not. And so we've got some words to discover, you see. And we can use the computer as a metaphor to force us to say, is what is being said in the Bible, does it fit the computer metaphor, or is it more than that? And if it's more than that, we're going to have to struggle to find out what's more than that, because the computer fits our cultural, I think you were raising, our cultural 20th century mind more than paradox and myths and stories does. So, by saying, I know that I'm more than a computer, and then saying, how am I more than a computer, that gives us kind of maybe an opening to experience and know in the whole fullness of the word, as it says in the Bible, what is really being said here to us. Okay? But we need to confront that, because the computer is a metaphor for our 20th century way of thinking, which may be too narrow, and we feel in our gut, no, I don't want to be just a computer. In our gut, then, we're saying, I just don't want to think 20th century thoughts. Let's think of it that way. And I'm going to have to struggle to not just think 20th century thoughts, because I am a 20th century thinker. Okay? But I'm called to be more than that. Okay? That's what I'm getting at. Okay, we had a couple more here. Marty?
Yeah, I'm still not real convinced about treating your child right. That seems to me that you can be programmed just as easily to be an abusive parent. Perhaps not quite as easily, because you are wired to be a caring person.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Genetically you're wired, and you talk about all those different inputs. You have to talk about environmental and genetic inputs. The behaviorists make a very good case. We haven't really talked about that, but the behaviorists will talk very much in terms of person as a computer, and you cannot act in a way that's inconsistent with your input. That may be not a good word, but your program. And the program, they would just make the case that the program is incredibly complicated, and one of the big differences between a human and a computer is that it's a lot more difficult to reprogram a human being.
I would say if we want to get beyond what the behaviorists say, we're going to have to maybe read some people like Martin Buber and some people who talk that the reality is not in this thing or that thing, the computer or the information, but in the relationship. And that's a whole other way of thinking again. It's not really 20th century.
I just thought a little bit to the behaviorist. When I was teaching a course in death and dying, I wanted to put the interdisciplinary, so I was getting some psychological theories. They were all psychoanalytic. So I went to my behaviorist friend and said, how about some behavioralist studies, you know, to sort of get these things balanced? And he said, there were none they could cite. And I said, well, why? And one of my friends is very much interested. He said, well, you just can't deal with that, because there's too many variables. Too many variables. There's too much going on, you know. And so when you look at how great the behavioralists are, I mean, they're pretty good at getting me to stop smoking by blowing smoke in my face and making me sick. But it's always very controlled. And then they have this incredible faith statement that if we just knew more and could get all those variables, you know, we could then be able to predict me completely. And I think we have to really recognize the faith statement that's based on that, you know, because actually the success is very limited, and it's better on pigeons than on us. And I mean, it really is. I mean, that's nothing that I find on death and dying. And then, well, let's just stop there.
Well, yeah, there's just too many variables that we don't have, and I call it the science of the gap. If you recall, we had the God of the gap, where anything that science couldn't explain, you know, there was a hole in there. We said, well, that's where God is acting. Yeah. And now we have the science as a gap because there are things that... Now, I don't mean to knock the computer, and I don't even mean to knock the behavioral psychologist. There is, but we cannot deny our experience of the call to be more than that, the call to compassion, which quite often is irrational, and quite often, in terms of like the conversion type of experience, is certainly inconsistent with past behavior. There's a whole dimension to our being that is more than what fits the computer metaphor, and that's all I'm saying. That doesn't make the computer bad, by the way. It doesn't mean that we should be irrational and illogical. We're called to be more than that. And that's the way I would approach the Bible. We are called to be more than fitting everything into the computer metaphor which we as a society have chosen. And that opens us up and doesn't frees us from shoving everything into the computer metaphor that we get out of the Bible, or from each other. You had your thing.
Yeah. Another thought that came to me in relation to the question you were raising about if we have values, we should be consistent with this. It just kind of struck me a little bit because I've been doing some basic values verification work in my students. And one of the things we try to establish is, first of all, what are the values and what might be alternative values. And then, in a sense, the implication is once you've established better values or whatever, now your life can be consistent with that. And this kind of triggered me a little bit before the session because I think I'm sort of falling into that. And two things hit me about it. One is a very strong should. And if I don't do that, I really feel bad about myself. And if you don't do it, why am I going to let you have it? So you hear what I'm saying with that. And we're hard on ourselves and we're hard on one another. And then I tried to think of an alternative to that, and one word I was looking for came from the German, first of all, and I put Spielraum, and that means leeway. There has to be room for play in life. And kids are great because they play, and a couple of us with us adults who've lost a child, we can play. And I think that leaves the whole world of imagination and the joy of box and skateboard and jokes and horsing around some of the bad things of our lives, which is irrational, you know, why would an intelligent adult want to be stupid like that? And yet those are some of the greatest moments in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I think the Bible too tinkers into the world of caring by celebrating things with one another.
I think if we get into too much of a computer metaphor, we will actually have a negative view towards joy and play. And I think that has happened. And now think about this. Possibly that urging to have to play, maybe it's not evil lust. I mean, it may be. Maybe. Well, I mean, these are truths that are laid on people. Maybe it's a calling to be more than the computer.
Where do I leave my calling card?
Well, you're God, I guess. In here. Okay, that's the session, and obviously, like most of our sessions, you end up with a whole lot of different questions that come up, and a whole lot of different things. We are going to meet tomorrow. We will still end up with a whole lot of different questions, and I guess. And a lot of ideas and maybe a new way of seeing things, and I guess maybe that's what the Holden experience is about.